Welcome to another episode of Europe's B2B Tech Sales podcast. Today with Ian Koniak, ranked number one LinkedIn sales star by Sales Success Media in Q3, and actually nearly 9 years at Salesforce, one of the top producers, which means something in the number one world CRM system. Now, just spinning off what we could say into Ian Koniak sales coaching, built your business already to $500,000 in your first year, like with a backlog of 200 clients. Ian, like, if you can share a bit more about like just how you got into sales in the first place and what got you here today.
Yeah, I know we got a lot on the agenda today, so I'll keep it really quick. But for me, sales was very much a money-driven organ. You know, I got in because I needed money. I was a teacher before I got into sales. I lived in South America and Venezuela for a year, and I fell in love, and my visa expired, and I wanted to continue the relationship. And the only way I was going to continue was if I put this woman, my ex-girlfriend now, through college, because they weren't giving work visas out from Venezuela. And so I had to save enough money to pay her tuition and to be able to fly her to the US and to support both of us in a very short window. I was 23 years old, and I'm like, well, I'm a teacher. I can't be a teacher. What am I going to do? And so I thought maybe sales would be good because you get paid based on your performance. And I was super motivated. I applied a lot of different places, and one of the places gave me an opportunity. And I started by selling copiers door to door in doing, I would say, the school of hard knocks, doing really, really hard selling and high volume, high cold calling. I was getting thrown out of buildings by security guards, and they put me in the worst territory. It was Koreatown. And I just got a lot of practice, a lot of repetition, and learned sales in that first year, you know, through some good mentors and coaches. And fortunately, here we are 19 years later. That was kind of my entry into sales, but it was a lot of like hard selling, cold call, more transactional type sales. And I did that for a while and then transitioned into software after about 10 years, building and running sales teams, you know, in that company. I knew that SaaS was the future, and, you know, and that kind of led me. And now it's time to go sell my own stuff. So it's been quite the journey so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So you spend like a decade in door to door, like hardware sales, then a decade in SaaS, and now it's a decade in like sales coaching, basically. Could you share two actionable insights from your door to door sales time? Because I think it's one of the best schools in sales that stuck with you throughout these last two decades, like two things that every salesperson should adapt.
Yeah, it's interesting you asked about the door-to-door stuff, because it's different than the SaaS insights that I would give working at Salesforce. So yeah. I like that you broke that down. So the first thing, if you're selling a transactional product, right, where there's not long sales cycles or complex selling like software, it truly is a numbers game, right? Activity yields pipeline, yields results. Know your numbers, right? How many calls or emails or outreaches do you need to send to set up an appointment? How many appointments do you need to do to create a new opportunity, and how many opportunities do you have to close a deal? So for me, you know, our numbers were super simple my first year. And my manager, my mentor told me, Ian, if you do two appointments and you set two appointments every single day, right, that's all you have to worry about. Then that means you're going to be doing 10 appointments per week. And if you're doing 10 appointments per week, even if you're brand new and you don't have experience, you should be able to create four opportunities. And if you're creating four opportunities a week, that's 16 a month. Even if you're brand new and you're a terrible closer, you should be able to close 25% of those deals. And sure enough, I followed the metrics. I worked on just making two appointments every day and doing two appointments, and it worked to a T, you know, because our average deal size was about 10K. So I was selling four deals per month, selling about 40K per month. And, you know, that was enough for me to overachieve my quota. And I had about 16 opportunities. I closed at 25%. And then as I got more repetition, you know, I guess the first tip is know your numbers. The second is truly about, you know, spending more time on fewer opportunities, but larger opportunities, right? So,
right.
So as I knew my numbers, I'm like, man, this is a grind. I can't do this as much. I can't do 16 opportunities a month. That's crazy, right? And so I gradually started saying, okay, I am going to focus on qualifying better and I'm going to focus on closing at a higher percentage. So I ended up becoming, instead of 25% closing, I ended up closing 50% of my deals. So now that same 40K became 80K per month, and I was selling close to $1 million. So it's not just about grinding and knowing the numbers. It's about actually improving the numbers. So know your base numbers and work on improving the metrics that matter, which is, for me, it was the conversion rate for my opportunities, and it was the average deal size. So I started focusing more on larger clients. I started focusing on my right ideal customer profiles. So I think for transactional, it's easy to say, oh, it's just the numbers, make the dials, blah, blah, blah. But it's not. It's not about that. It's not about trying to just do 16 opportunities a month. If you can close 50% of it, then you only have to do 8. And if those deals are twice as big, then you only have to do half of that. So I think really look at the data and know your metrics. Don't just do what your manager tells you to do. In the first year, yes, listen, take orders. You know, that's in the first year, you pay your dues. If you have new people listening, you've got to pay your dues. But as you, you know, stick it out and get longer, then know your own numbers and work your own plan. So that's kind of the advice I'd give for anything transactional.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think the underlying lesson is also consistency, right? That we see so many salespeople, they prospect a bit and then they get 4 appointments and they're like, oh, I'm busy doing the appointments. I have enough funnel. They do them. They close 1 out of 4, 2 out of 4. And then it's like, oh, I don't have any leads. And then if it's a sales cycle time of 3 to 9 months, yes. Months, nothing will close.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. So I hit quota 42 months in a row. This stands as a global record for leads. 42 months in a row. I'm not aware of anyone in any industry in sales that has done this B2B. How did I do that? It's because I always consistently prospected, even as I was working my deals. So that whole do to is the running your appointments, running your opportunities, advancing pipeline. And the set to is always be creating new pipeline. So for me, consistently prospecting while you're advancing your pipeline, I think is really important, especially in transactional sales. I think it does shift a little when you get into software and enterprise sales. You know, it's not necessarily, you don't want to prospect at the expense of execution with strategic larger deals, but with anything that's transactional, lower ticket, smaller item, you always have to be prospecting. Super important.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a relevant point. That is, like, you've always been as like a really like high quality, like highly experienced salesperson. You've always been prospecting still yourself. Like, what do you think of the whole upcoming SDR, BDR, account executive customer success management model, where it's hyper specializing, and there's so many account executives that say, like, I want to have 100K base and 100K OTE, and I do not produce a single lead myself. Is it, for me, it sometimes feels like a bit of a chef that cannot go grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that analogy. Here's my true answer versus the answer I'd love to say, and then I believe, because I grew up without BDRs. I mean, I've been selling almost 20 years, and that didn't exist, right? BDR, SDR.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had to hunt what we caught. We had to kill what we hunted, right? So yeah. For me, I think that skill is, I mean, I still think it's super important, and I want to be very, very clear, is if you can prospect, the larger the deals and the larger and the bigger companies require, because I was selling to the Fortune 500 companies at Salesforce. I was selling to the biggest, and I was selling to the C-suite. That is not something a BDR or an SDR is going to have the skills, background, expertise, or confidence to go do, period. I don't care who you are, right? And that might offend people, it might not. But I have 19 years of executive disposition, business acumen, understanding how to, speak business, right? I wouldn't want someone calling a CEO on my behalf when I only have a handful of accounts. They can go to directors, they can go to maybe VPs, but for that C-suite, I'm going to be focusing on myself. So if you're selling larger enterprise deals, if you're selling software, be really good at be strategic with your prospecting, understanding how to research an account, understanding how to research an individual, understanding how to come up with insights or point of views on how and where you can help them. That skill is not something that BDRs are taught or developed, right? A lot of the BDR world right now, it's a numbers game. You get your dials in, you set your appointments, but they're not looking at the quality as much as they are looking at the quantity. That's what I've seen in a lot of places. So I'm not a huge fan of BDRs do it themselves and you're just closing. because I feel like there's some skills that are going to be really helpful from researching and coming up with the point of view and being really targeted that more advanced sellers are going to need to harness. And if they just depend on their BDRs to set the meetings, they're not going to even take the time to come up with that. So my general philosophy is prospecting is really important for AEs. With that in mind, you know, if you can get to your number and you have so many leads coming in where you're just, your plate is full and you're closing deals, hey, more power to you. Your marketing, your, you know, BDRs, something's going really right. And if AEs could like live and just work deals, man, I'm envious. That never was something that I experienced in my tenure of 19 years. So
likewise. But I think you hit an excellent point there. If you're going into account-based selling and your target market is not like nearly B2C, like what then Lock and Zone call high ticket, like 1 to 10K, but it's rather like 50 to 100K and more. There's limited number of accounts. So we see that so many times that our B2B startup clients get approached by like a lead gen agency and it's like, hey, we can do a sales engagement campaign for 100 people a day. And it's like, great, what are you going to do next week? Because you just fucked up my whole target market with a generic 8 to 12 step sales engagement platform sequence. It's not useful.
Yeah, totally. I'm adamantly against that because you have to remember I was a strategic account director at Salesforce. So I only had two accounts in my last year at Salesforce. Before that, I had three accounts. Before that, I had five accounts. So they kind of like made less and less every year so we could be more focused and more engaged. But I had, you know, 50 to 100 products to sell those accounts. I had MuleSoft and Tableau and Slack and, you know, Marketing Cloud and Service Cloud and all kinds of things. So my job as a director was really to make sure that our company was supporting their most strategic initiatives, helping them solve their biggest challenges. And then I would have this massive toolkit to be able to tailor whatever we were selling to their problems. So when you work for a company that size and when you're selling to the enterprise, you absolutely, you know, can't rely on necessarily like, you know, top of funnel BDR agency model to do that because it requires so much time and energy up front to be able to understand the client and really, you know, almost like you're an employee for them, not a salesperson.
And I think that's such an interesting journey you went through, like coming from probably school of hard knocks, like 200 to 300 pitches every day, all day, like rain, hailstorm, whatever. And like prospecting like 1,000 people pretty much, like, or companies every week, I guess, to like two companies a year. Like, what would you recommend somebody that says like, I'm really excited about B2B tech sales. I want to enter the profession. Still go door to door sales, like physical selling printers, selling like NGO stuff, or like go to B2B sales straight away where it's a really different game.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd advocate anyone selling door to door in these days because now people are working from home and all you know, it's changed a lot. I mean, I would go into a high rise and drive out and go up and down and hand out my cards in buildings and in LA. But I don't know if that's the most efficient way now. But I do think for anyone that's starting out, by far the best teacher is not me or you as a podcast host or a book or any of the stuff on LinkedIn. The best teacher is experience. Okay. Yep. And that's what I would advocate is like, you have to get a lot of reps in. You learn by doing, right? Confucius says, I hear and I forget. I see and I see and I remember. I do and I understand. And for me, I got really, really good in sales by falling on my face a lot, by getting a lot of reps, by remember, 25% close ratio. That means for every one deal won, I lost three. I was terrible. But then again, I heard the objections that were common. I met with the different types of clients. I figured out who and what are the decision makers for the markets that I was selling. I figured out the value proposition. So the best teacher is just getting out there and falling on your face. I see too often people are waiting for the perfect, you know, product knowledge, or, you know, they're nervous or they don't think they have the experience to be able to sell effectively, but you're not going to get that until you actually go out and do it. So for me, I do think it's not about like where you go, whether it's D2D or software or whatever. I think it's about trying to get a lot of I would advocate to go start in a growth market or start in a SMB type of sale so that you can have a lot of accounts and get a lot of practice. I would never say start at the enterprise, for example, because by that time, you know, you have to have a certain a sales pedigree, you have to have a certain quality to actually connect with senior executives. And I'm so glad I didn't do that my first 10 years, because once I got into Salesforce, you know, I fell on my face. I wasn't as great as what I thought it was, because I had to modify my approach and be much more strategic with how I was, you know, engaging with my clients. And so I think just getting that practice closing and doing discovery and, you know, running appointments and engaging with smaller companies is a really good first start for anyone new to their sales career.
Yeah, and then that sounds great, right? And I think it's really great that now, like after like two decades working in B2B sales, essentially, like you founded your own company, as went from sales to entrepreneurship. Can you tell us a bit more about what you do at Ian Koniec sales training, and like how you help B2B account executives? I think that's your ideal customer profile, pretty much.
Yeah.
Or do it really for companies such as Salesforce now as well?
Yeah. So to kind of give a context, this has been an evolution for my entire career. You know, a lot of times we're doing things and we don't necessarily know how it's going to help you down the road, but then we draw upon those experiences when we're in the situations. So like, man, I'm glad I did that thing. So I started, as I mentioned, as a teacher. That was my original background before going into sales. So for me, it's all kind of coming full circle. But essentially what we do, or what I do is I work with a lot of mostly software AEs. A lot of them are either in enterprise or maybe they're mid-market. They're trying to get to enterprise. Maybe a few of them are newer to SaaS and they just want to be successful. They don't want to pay the tuition and fall on their face. But they come to me because they're not necessarily getting the support from their team or their leadership. Maybe their company's giving them some product training, but they just aren't able to sell. They've been really hustling, working hard, and maybe getting the plan. Maybe they're doing well and they feel like they're going to burn out. But for the most part, I coach them on how to be more strategic in terms of spending more time with fewer people, but the right target audience. So I work with them on, you know, planning, mastering their message, getting a value proposition that's going to stick with the C-suite. We do a lot of work, but if I can pinpoint one thing I do really, really well with my clients is I teach them how to get into meetings with executives and sell to executives, which a lot of people struggle because they're selling at a lower level and they're doing bottom up selling, which takes a long time. And that for me has been the biggest determinant from how I went from kind of average rep to how I became number one rep at Salesforce. Is I focused more on selling to the C-suite. I learned what they care about. I learned how to engage with them. And that's what I'm teaching people for the most part.
Yeah, and that makes a ton of sense. And so, like, let's say I would be an accounts executive at like a B2B SaaS scale up, like doing 10-20 million ARR here in Switzerland, and I would love to work with you. Like, how does it work? Like, what do I invest? Like, what are my options to work with you right now?
Well, it's all changing. So I used to have one-on-one coaching where I would charge, it was a 12-week program. I would charge $6,000 US per individual, and they would get me for 12 weeks straight. So every week we would have a Zoom call for 1 hour in between. You know, they can text me here and there, and I'm coaching them. You know, so I have a 12-week
program. So you charge like $500 an hour, like it's a structured program, and it's like in 3 months I get you like to be more strategic, more effective, and
we work on your deals. We role play. We work on your accounts. We work on your strategy. It's all I teach you how to be successful in your role, and it's been wildly successful. I have 200 people on the wait list, but the problem is it doesn't scale, right? It doesn't scale. I can only take 15 people at a time, right? I mean, I guess I could take 20. So I take 20 people and they pay 6,000 each. That's 120,000 for a 3 month period times four. It scales to about 500,000 a year, which is fine. And that's what I told you I did that this past year. But the truth is my mission is not to serve 15 people at a time. My mission is to transform how sales is done and bring integrity to the profession and help people enjoy selling. The other half of what I do is not just teach people how to sell. It's actually teach people how to live their life with integrity. And what I mean by that, I mean, it's taking care of their health. I mean, being there for their family. I mean, being a kind, good person. I mean, finding joy and fulfillment in things outside of work, because people put all their eggs in their achievement basket. And if they don't hit, they're depressed and they're, you know, upset and, you know, they're beating themselves up. And it's just like this industry, which is full of like a lot of pain and anxiety and stress and addiction and all these things that I experienced, frankly, is a sales rep that was only judging my self-worth based on my performance. So
half of it's really, And I really appreciated your, I think, two LinkedIn posts. Like one, when you ask your wife, I think it's a public post, right? Like, what do you want for your birthday? And it's like, nothing, I don't need anything. I have you back, like from being like quota carrying, like I make a million, I make 1.2, I make 1.1. And being like so numbers driven, which is on one hand, a necessity in sales to have that hunger and drive and commitment. But on the other hand, it's also detrimental for the profession, how it's regarded in society and like at young talent, right? I mean, in the US, it's better than in Europe, but in Europe, like if you're telling somebody I go into sales, like, why do you do that? What did you study for? Like, this is horrible. And you're not invited to the family reunion.
It's looked down upon. That's right. I think you're hitting a good point. And that point is the metrics in the performance and income, right? Everybody, scoreboard, leaderboard, income. That's all people care about in sales. And if you make that the center of your life, you know, society might look down upon it and say, oh, salespeople are greedy, or they're pushy, or they're selfish, and those, all the worst things about sales. And on the personal level, it could impact your family, because if you're not hitting your numbers, you might carry that stress and anxiety to your family. And certainly that's what I did. And so that's a big, big part of my coaching. And what my mission is to help people live, you know, what I call lives of integrity, where they're working their hardest in doing the right things when they're working. And they see sales as an opportunity to help people and to serve people and to help companies solve problems or, you know, address challenges or achieve goals and help the people they're working with, you know, understand what's important to them and help them be successful. If you can switch kind of this, so like, I'm here to serve myself and my wallet, my W-2 and my income, and I'm here to serve and solve problems, like, and then carry that into your family and all other aspects, you are living in integrity. And that's kind of the journey that I transformed in my own life. And I just feel like there's so much magic on the other side that now I want to teach people and show people. And I've seen people, literally, I just have a new client now stop vaping because that was out of integrity for her. I had another person stop viewing pornography. I had another person, you know, make time for their family and stop working at a certain hour so they can be with their children. And all these things that I went through, my personal hardships, now I could, you know, ingest into my coaching, because I don't care if you make $1 million. I don't care if you finish number one. I really don't. What I care about is that you're happy, you're fulfilled, and you're living your best life. And so that's the other half of my coaching, is really working with people on what does that look like for them, and drawing those boundaries so they can be healthy and happy and connecting with those they love most. Because I do believe that helps you perform your best in work when you have your personal shit in order as well. And that's, there's a lot of integrity in selling that I think will change the industry. If sales can be a destination industry, because it's about, like, why is management consulting looked at as positive? Why is, you know, Deloitte, PwC, when they're doing the same thing? They're coming in, they're assessing what a company needs and making recommendations on how they can transform their business. That's really what selling is in a nutshell, but we just have software that, you know, we attach to that process. So why is it okay to be a consultant but not a salesperson? It's really the same thing.
I think it's changing as well. I mean, I spent like 4 years in consulting. Like my wife spent 7 years in consulting, or like 5 plus 2 basically. And like a lot of friends in like BCG, McKinsey and so on. So it's changing as well, where the great talent goes, it goes a lot into entrepreneurship as well. So now that you're basically from a quota carrying sales director, like, to building the company, like, how do you embark on this journey to impact like 4 times 15 people, like every quarter, to impact 1,000 lives positively, or like 10,000? What do you want to be within Ian Koenig Sales Training in 2025?
Yeah, it's a great question.
And how do you build?
It's something I've had to go deep. So there's a great book I recommend for anyone listening called The Go-Giver. It's by Bob Berg, and it's about how do you make giving as the foundation of your business, giving value, giving, you know, something the market needs, giving yourself. And it says you really, you know, need to focus on the quality of your product, really deliver something that is going to be valuable. And the second thing is deliver it to as many people as possible. And so I thought about, yeah, my quality is great, you know, in terms of like, I'm showing up, I'm giving my all, I care about my clients and I'm helping them and I know how to help them. But the second part of that, I'm giving to as many people as possible, is very much restricted now. So I took a step back and I said, well, how can I scale my business, serve more people, and do it in a way that still, you know, can be, you know, financially lucrative. Because that is important to me. I'm not going to say I'm a charity. I'm not, right? I'm here to help people be successful. But I also have my family. You know, my wife's a full-time mom, my kids. I, you know, I have a lifestyle, and frankly, I don't want to have to worry about that. Like, I don't want to have to worry about paying the bills.
No, so. For sure. And I think we both like believers in, if you make other people 10 million a year, you can make one for yourself. Like, that's just like the ROI function.
So. That's exactly right. I know my value of what I'm giving, and I charge for my value based on what I'm doing. So I shifted the business model, and it's definitely, there's three kind of, so I'm cut off my individual coaching in its current form, and I'm moving to a membership site. So that's what I'm building right now. And it's really hard because it's in addition to all the coaching, and I'll do keynotes, I'll do workshops for companies to train their teams in a one to many format. So sales leaders or, you know, people that are trying to teach enterprise selling or how to have impactful executive conversations. I'm already working with them. So it's not just the individuals. I work with companies too. And I'm going to keep doing that. So that's kind of one leg of my business is doing company trainings and workshops. The other leg is the B2C portion, which you're touching upon, which right. is the coaching. So I'm getting away from the private 12-week program, and I'm moving to a membership site where the product is going to be a membership, a one-year membership, almost like coaching as a service is a good way to think of it. So you can renew every year, and there's going to be three tiers of subscription. So just, I remember I came from Salesforce, so I'm used to selling software.
Start a professional
edition, we have enterprise edition, and we have unlimited edition. So there's three tiers. So that's kind of how I'm setting up my coaching as a service platform. So the bronze is going to be the first tier, and it will be online coaching and then membership in a private community. And it'll just be recorded videos and worksheets and kind of do it yourself, where they come in and they can watch the videos, they can go through the worksheets, they can apply it themselves. And the goal is to be able to scale that to, you know, thousands of people. That bronze tier where it's going to be $3,000 a year versus 6 years. So it's a little cheaper, but they're not getting the hands-on support from me.
Yeah.
The silver tier is going to be group coaching. So I'll have every week, I'll have a group, a cohort of people that I'm coaching, that I'm teaching, and they'll have access to not only the online videos and the training courses, but they'll also have me every week live to do Q&As, to do role plays with them, to work with them in a one-to-many setting. And they'll also have a private Slack channel that I will answer questions and help them. And that'll be $6,000 a year, right? Versus, you know, over 3 months, but they're not getting the one-on-one time with me. And then the gold membership will be the same as the bronze and silver, but they'll also get a one-on-one call with me every month, one private call per month with me for 12 months straight, or they can accelerate those calls and just buy more calls if they need more time.
Right. So then you get like 12, half an hour, 1 hour calls, and it's going to be like basically like 12K or so a year.
It would be 12K a year. It would still be 12 one-hour calls because I don't think you can do much in a half hour. But instead of doing it 12K, one private call a month, plus the portal, plus the group calls, they would get 12 calls. They can do it over a quarter. So they can do a back-to-back 12 weeks, still get that same level for 12K. And if they wanted to buy more sessions with me, they could buy the same, you know, 6K for another 12 sessions and do it every. So I'm not going to force people to wait to have a call with me every month if they want more intensive, but it will start at 12,000 versus the 6,000 because there's a lot more value. They're getting the portal, they're getting the community, they're getting the Slack, they're getting the group coaching calls every week, and they're getting private. So this will scale much, much better. I'm going to have, I know I'll have a sales, you know, director that's selling some of the discovery calls, but the idea is to automate a lot of this. So I'm working on a lot of that now where I'm building funnels. I'm you know, even something simple like a contract right now, when I have a coaching client sign up, I have to do a contract and they sign it. I have to collect the money. That's all going to be online. It's going to be terms of service. So I'm really modeling it more after software companies. And I'm super excited about it. So it'll serve a lot of people. And it's just the beginning. I'm like,
yeah, for sure.
Right now.
For sure. And I think this is the journey where all of like this kind of professional service coaching turns, information product turns, productized service goes through, right? That if you use like Kajabi, Thinkific, Learnable, whatever, like how to modularize it, like how much is group, how much is one-to-one, how much does it scale, is like $500 an hour, but then that's limited and so on. So I think that's the interesting journey everybody goes through. And like, if you want to hit it beyond like 25 to 40K a month, pretty much.
Yeah, you're right. And you mentioned Kajabi is the first one. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm doing my Kajabi rollout. I literally did my designs for my landing pages. I'm working on my email sequences. So for me, it's all new, but it's stuff that I love. I'm so happy and excited. I'm getting recruited to come back as a CRO or run the sales
program. Like, nah, I don't think so.
I'm like, hell no, I'm not even touching that. As much as I mean, for me, it's like, again, if you make service the center of what you're doing, like for me, I truly do want to build a great program, deliver tremendous value, help people improve their sales and their lives. And that's what the content is. It's not just content on how to have executive conversations or run discovery meetings or put together a proposal. Yes, it's all of that, but it's also like how to freaking live your best life, right? How to, how to improve your relationship. Like all this stuff is going to be there because that helps your sales. When you have your personal shit in chaos, you can't sell, you can't be effective. So that's the foundation, is the right mindset, the right habits, the right behaviors, the right, no one's doing that now. There isn't a single person I'm aware of that is teaching personal development with strategic sales training, right? Maybe there is, but I don't know of them. There's a lot of sales training out there, and there's a lot of like Tony Robbins and
personal development. There's a lot of like the kind of austere, like basically lifestyle, like stop drinking, stop smoking, don't have fun, like work 12 hours every day, like all day, like have only like protein shake for lunch kind of thingy, like optimize, like the quantified self-optimization. But I think you're doing a great job in that. So yeah. And it's interesting that everybody goes through this, like this Kajabi journey, right? I mean, I started with Kajabi 1.5 years ago, a bit more, like by now, like integrated everything, like knowledge, coaching, offerings, talent into our own proprietary app. But I think like it's a great way to start it out and like just see how far you can push it. And then like at one point just optimize. It's really great stuff.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Maybe I'll lean on you for advice. And as we're going right now, again, it's just build and we'll see. I think this concept that I'm really having to remind myself every day is this concept of an MVP, right? In software, you build your minimum viable product. And I tell this to my clients. I say good now is better than perfect never.
Absolutely.
Perfect later. So absolutely. I'm just like, okay, the copy doesn't have to be perfect. The course content, the decks, you know, all that I can iterate, improve, optimize, but I just want to get this out so I can start serving people.
No, absolutely. And some people usually overestimate the thing that I need a studio and I need a design. And no, you need Loom and you need like Kajabi. And then you put it up there. You have the worksheet that you used for probably like for 2 decades in your profession. Oh. And then like that provides value.
Yeah, it's so true. It doesn't need to be perfect. It's like, I'm going to record it on my computer. I'll have Zoom and I'll just record it. I have a little cheap mic that I bought on Amazon. I got a backlight. I'm not worried about that because I have, you know, that stuff doesn't replace quality content, substance, experience, stories, all the stuff that I am bringing. So, you know, production quality might suffer a little bit. And if you care about that, like you're probably not the right,
birth.
It's if you want content and quality and real world experience, then that's what I'm trying to go for. So you're right. And it's just fun. I can't wait to see what the future holds on this thing. Cause right now it's in its infancy. It's just being.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And love to like ask you like 2-3 rapid fire questions pretty much before we wrap it up. Also like on your personal journey, like what the future brings. And then I think you spent 2 decades roughly like in B2B sales. Like what's your number one source of improving your own sales skills today? Like any people, podcasts, books that you can recommend?
I like Keenan a lot. I saw him speak. He wrote the book Gap Selling.
Gap Selling, yeah.
Neil Rackham wrote Spin Selling. If you think about kind of selling to executives and there's another guy who just I don't know the name. His name is Jamal Ramir. He just literally released it yesterday. And so I'll promote his book. It's called Mega Deal Secrets, I think is what it's called. Jamal, Reimer. That book is really about how to close big mega deals. Reimer, Mega Deal Secrets. I think those three would be pretty good starts for enterprise sellers who are looking to improve their selling skills, because they're really focused on how to be customer centric with your discovery, with developing a point of view, with focusing on the problems you solve. And I think for me, I've had such success in selling because I have made it about the person that I'm speaking with and really taken the time to understand what they need. And before I ever pitch or propose, like, I'll give you a great example. I just got a guy yesterday who's like, send me information. He's someone I know pretty well. He's like, we're planning our SKO. And I sent him back and said, I'm not sending you anything until I talk to you.
Because it's useless. Like, send me some information. To this day, I don't know what some information even
That's means. What I said. I said, I don't know what
you want to send me. Why should you want to do that?
Like, why would I do that? Like, what are you telling me?
Send me some pricing. Send me an offer. Like, send me some stuff.
This guy is the CRO of a very big company, and I could care less. Doesn't matter. Like, I'm going to follow my process that I know works and helps people. So I think not being attached is really, like, important, right? Following, yeah. Keeping an integrity for me is everything with my sales cycle. So if I don't get a deal, I don't get a deal. I don't care. I'm not worried. I know I have business coming in, and it's a good place to be. So the those books are really about making it about the customer and really spending time, you know, understanding their problems and showing them how you can help them before you ever try and sell. Because closing should be the easiest part, right? So
closing follows discovery and understanding. And it's like engineering. If the design's crap, like production and manufacturing and after sales will be a pain in the ass. And if design is fantastic, like you don't even need to change it, right? You have a coffee machine like that runs limitedly for 12 years, and then there's other stuff who's cheap from Wish maybe as well, and it breaks all the time. So not doing yourself a favor. And yeah, what's one thing like both sales but also personal that you would have loved to know when you were 20? And like, I guess you are now 42. If I make
add I am math. 42. Yeah, your calculations are correct. I want to add one book before I answer that question. So those are the sales books, but if you want a life book that is really valuable, it's kind of like my Bible. The Bible is a great book too. I apply a lot of Bible principles on how I live my life. Sure. But I haven't read the Bible, so I can't say to read it. I just know scriptures and where I can apply them to my family and my, you know, my work. But the Bible of personal development, if you will, for me is a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And I know a lot of people have heard of it, but really going in and digging deep and doing the exercises and applying those principles. And, you know, people read books and it's like, okay, I'll go to the next one. Without really deeply applying. But I frankly think that book is the sum of probably 100 books that I've read in personal development, time management, organization, focus, mission, purpose, sales, communication, influence, like summed up into one book. So instead of reading 10 books, read that, read it again, apply it, go through the exercise, spend 6 months on it. And I think it would be, it's all you need. I mean, it's all so much of what I'm doing now, I've taken from principles in that book in terms of where I focus, what's important, what's not, how I manage my time, my mission statement, my vision, my purpose, like all of it comes from like the principles in that book.
So interesting that you mentioned that book, because always when people ask me like on one like business, but also life book, I say Speed of Trust, written by like Stephen M. R. Covey, like his son, scaled the company internationally, because I think it boils down to these very basic principles of integrity, of intent, of capabilities, of results, of as you say, like highly effective habits, and not if it's Salesforce or like HubSpot, quite frankly, or like whatever the tool is, right? And people worry too much about Bund versus Scotsman versus Medic and stuff.
Yeah, totally. It's so true. And that's what I'm hoping to change. Like people ask me, well, what methodology are you using? Are you using Gap or Medic? And I'm like, doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. A methodology is a process to make sure you're asking certain discovery questions, but how you show up, how you engage, how you relate, how you connect, like that's what I'm teaching. Like the actual, yeah. You know, the interpersonal skills, which frankly, I think a lot of people don't have these days is much because they're living in digital worlds and on their phones and with emojis and Instagram and TikTok. And it's just like, I didn't grow up in that world. Right. I'm old school. So those skills, believe me, the people skills are what executives aren't living on TikTok and Facebook and even LinkedIn, right? They're doing their work. They're in meetings all day. They're engaging. So you have to be really good at having those conversations. So as far as the question you had asked before, you said, what did I wish I knew at 20 years old that I know now? Man, when I was 20, I was a fucking nut job. I was absolutely out of my head, wild, addicted, crazy, college. I was in Australia when I was 20 and getting crazy hammered and traveling all around. And I think back on those days and it's not even like a lifetime ago. It's a different person entirely. And if I looked back on what I was doing then, I don't know if I would change a thing. I think that experience made me realize a lot of you know, it led to where I am now, and you know, the mistakes I made, you know, basically helped me to fix, you know, and to realize what I don't want, right? So I can focus on what I do want. So I wouldn't change anything, but I think what I'd say to my 21-year-old self is probably stop searching. Because at that point when I was 20, I was always searching, you know, for the next best thing. That's why I lived in Australia. And I went to Australia and I wasn't happy. So I moved to a different campus in Australia. And then I went there and I wasn't happy. So I go to Venezuela and I teach English. And then I go back here and then I want to change. You know, it's like sometimes you think what you're going to find is with a better company or a different career or a better manager, or, you know, you're searching. But for me, I was never happy. Whenever I got to that place that I was trying to arrive at, then I would search for something else. And I think that's a lot of people, because we have so many options and choices, especially younger people.
Yeah.
That the what I've learned now is the grass is not greener on the other side. The grass is greener where you water it. So to be where you are and to give your all and be all in with wherever you are and not have other options or half out the door or thinking about how much better things are going to be is the key to living a happy, fulfilled life, is to give your all in your current capacity. And so that's what I would tell my 20-year-old self is stop searching and commit, you know, to being where you are, because I never found what I was looking for until I stayed in one place. And that's why I stayed at Rico for so long and Salesforce and in my relationship. It's like, anytime you have an out, you're going to take the out, but when you're committed and when you're all in, and when people say burn the boats, right? Proverbial burn the boats, where if you are going to war and you're going in the ship and you land in you know, the land where you're going to fight, if you burn the boats, you're either coming out victorious or dead, right? You can't retreat.
Right. So and I think that's really like an important point you mentioned. Like, by the way, like one friend, the grass on the other side is only greener because it's fertilized with more shit. So it isn't, but I mean, we also said like, it's all about playing long-term games with long-term people. And sometimes I think you brought up an interesting point regarding technology, right? That technology, there's tech powered sales, like the Justin Michaels of this world, really push for it is like, get everybody like a 2K sales deck, like with automation and conversational intelligence. But what's the most interesting trend in B2B sales you see emerging right now, also selling to executives? I mean, is Sixth Sense and Zoom Influence on really solving the problem of like figuring out intent and timing and the buyer journey for you? And what's the thing that you believe will change in sales in the next few years?
Yeah, it's so funny because I'm not a technologist. I, if you go to like a John Barros or, you know, some of these folks, they know the tech stacks, and we'll talk about the different, stacks that you need, whether it be outreach and, you know, Sales Loft or CRM or Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever it is. And ironically, I worked at Salesforce. when I say like emerging trends, I have coached a couple people from Sixth Sense, interestingly. But in a sales automation format, I think the general trend, which I believe is going to be really, really important in that's been lacking. And I think the tooling, generally the AI and a lot of what I'm seeing out there is trying to address, is the need for coaching. So if you think about Gong or conversational intelligence and understanding, you know, in AI or intent or whatever, all these tools are trying to coach the AEs on how and where to spend their time. Gong is recording, you know, conversations and say what words to use, what phrases to use, how to use it. Or they're looking at emails and say how long they should be or when you should send them or when you should not send them. Or Sixth Sense is telling you who's going to buy and when are they going to buy and when do you have to call these leads. It's all great. This is all great and it's helpful, but the general trend that I'm seeing, which scares the shit out of me, is that the tools are going to do the coaching, okay? And the tools are going to help you, but without someone to actually listen to the conversation and to sit down with you and to do a one-on-one or to review the quality of what's really coming in or to actually, like, I think there's almost becoming an over-dependence on technology to do some of the training and the coaching that frontline managers should be doing. And so I can't say what the next greatest thing is. And frankly, I don't care. I think any tool is helpful if it gives you insights into a buyer journey, behavior, or how you can get better. But without somebody actually helping and showing you know, how to interpret the data and how to actually get better using it. So you see these like recordings, conversational intelligence, but then the manager is so busy, they have no time to actually listen to it and coach and take the time. So that's the thing is I would be cautious of putting in a big tech stack and expecting the tech to, you know, to do something without the human application and coaching of it. So I can't say again what the next best thing is, but I do believe that tools and technologies that help people coach and develop their people are going to be the ones that are going to be the highest adoption and probably the most successful. And that's why, again, you know, certain automation tools and Sixth Sense or Outreach or Sales Loft or Gong are getting such massive growth because they're all with the intent is making it easier for the AEs to do their jobs and automate some of the stuff. And I think it's great, but don't forget the human leader that needs to tell people and coach and develop and help them, because no one's going to tell you how to have a good conversation or how to not look down, you know, when you're talking to someone, or, you know, when to ask for the business, when to shut up. Like, those are the skills that are tried and true in sales that those tools may not, you know, really develop. So make sure you look at the person and where they need help and still, you know, help coach them at the human level versus just over depending on the tools.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought it up that in the end, like, it's really about coaching. If it's like how you have the dialogue, how you do your outreach, how you close these deals, how you build mutual action plans, when's the right timing. It boils down to sales coaching at scale to bring the next generation of talent like to the next level, I feel so.
Yeah, 100%. That's what I'm seeing. And that's where I see the success. And I didn't know this question was going to be asked. And I can't recommend tools or what to do. But, you know, for me, anything that automates or makes the lives of, I'm a huge proponent of Calendly, for example. All of my Calendly appointments are you scheduled this through, you know, going through a Calendly, and all of my, even my discovery calls, I have a whole form they fill out, right? Whether it's a company or, you know, whether it's an individual, and it creates an automated Zoom link, it creates an invite. I get all the information before I start. It saves me so much time with scheduling. So I'm a huge proponent of automation of manual tasks that sales reps need to do. So if Sixth Sense automates, you know, researching of a person so that rep can have those data on what to talk about or when they came in or get, you know, the lead score, that's great, right? If outreach can automate sending, you know, stuff at scale that works and in your task and your follow-up, that's great, right? If Gong can help you get better, but it needs the human to program, to get it right, to optimize it. And that's where I feel like people are so damn like dependent on the tool, and they say the tool is going to solve this problem, and it won't do anything unless you really make the time to get the tool right, to train on the tool and to use the tool for coaching and for development of your people.
So, yeah, absolutely. So wrapping it up there as well, like, really love like your attitude to like have sales with integrity and lead a life with integrity, and also elevate the status of the sales profession after 2 decades starting door-to-door sales, making 40K a month, or like selling 40K a month, doubling that shortly. And then I think last time when you returned from paternity leave, you sold 1 million within 3 months, which is truly impressive. Yeah. Only sales rep I know as well that hit 40, 2 months of quota in a row, actually, in North America. Now building your own business, getting up to 500K very quickly. Embarking on this Kajabi, like group coaching, information product, one-to-one, limited coaching journey we all do, and all the best for your future. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be joining you on the journey you've been on, and appreciate you having me on the show, Manuel.